What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I chew a piece whenever I, you know, just need a little bit of a mental boost. Whenever I'm, you know, out making calls, showing houses to my clients, before a big meeting, before a workout, sometimes while I'm drilling in jiu-jitsu. You know, just really anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I pop a piece of NeuroGum, gets me to where I need to be. You know, only about 40 milligrams of caffeine per piece, so not going to get you super jazzed up, but just a little nice little mellow rush.
And also shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. They make unbelievable products for your beard, but they also have body wash, shampoo, conditioner, and candles, all made from natural ingredients and smell amazing. So if you're looking for any or you want to try new men's grooming stuff, give Captain Beard Co. a try and use our promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchases.
And lastly, thanks to our newest sponsor, Hand Wraps Rolling Papers. If you are a cannabis user, it's legal here in Missouri. You know, it's legal in a lot of states, and it's local to St. Louis. My friend Justin Bricker, also a jiu-jitsu practitioner, made this company. This is all him. They're in like 16 local dispensaries here in town, and they're the nicest quality rolling papers I've ever used. So get out there and check them out. To introduce our awesome guest today, hold on one moment before I... Murph might want to cut that out. I just want to make sure I get all his stuff in his bio.
I shot the it should be towards the top.
Oh, there it is.
Sent that group chat.
All right, Brad, I just want to get all your things, you know? All right, now to introduce our awesome guest today. He's a husband. He's a father. He is the owner and general manager of Clean Eats STL and part of Exos. Personal, might have to redo that.
Hey, we're going to chop that, Murph. We're going to start over.
We'll start that again. what would it be? Exos what?
You just say Exos Sport Performance or whatever.
What would the position be?
I'm the GM at Exos.
GM at Exos, owner it. Okay. Yep. Let me fucking do this again.
Got too much going on.
Yeah. All right. Murph, we're going to cut that out. I normally don't fuck these up, to be honest with you.
Pretty good.
Usually pretty good. Yeah. Now, to introduce our awesome guest today, he's a husband, he's a father. He's a jiu-jitsu practitioner. He's the owner of Clean Eats STL, the general manager at Exo Sport Performance, the great and powerful Brett Kelly.
Welcome, sir.
Great and powerful.
Yeah, dude. Great and powerful.
Heck yeah.
You'd be more powerful.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having
it's been a long time coming. We've been talking about this for a while, so I'm glad to finally get you in here. You know, for the people who don't know you out there, if you could just give us kind of a little brief intro to who you are.
Yeah. Grew up in St. Louis. Kind of always got into sports, strength conditioning. I played football growing up, played rugby, did wrestling, all that kind of stuff. And then went and did my undergraduate at University of Missouri. Came back here to St. Louis and got my master's in sports science. Really wanted to get into strength conditioning. So I found an internship with the U.S. ski team. Went out there, moved out to Utah for a year of unpaid internship, which was eye-opening. Learned a ton out there from that. And then that kind of led the way for me to start in the strength conditioning field. So I actually went and worked in minor league baseball for a while just because of connections I had. Went and did the Cardinals for a little bit. Went and did St. Louis University working with their softball baseball team. And then ended up meeting my wife when I was in St. Louis and got a job offer with the White Sox. So I moved back out to Phoenix. We did long distance and she moved with me to Utah. I got a job with U.S. ski team. Now we're back here in St. Louis. We moved back, I guess, into 2019. So right before, you know, shut down.
Yeah.
Came back here and partnered up with Exos and Mercy here in St. Louis to open up the space we're at now. So, yeah.
Nice.
So you did an internship with the U.S. ski team and then ended up going back there and getting a job with them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I did the internship. Like I said, that was, I don't even remember what year that was. 2012, maybe? 2013, I think, something like that. 2012, I guess, because the year before the Cardinals. So yeah, I did that out there and, you know, or any young strength coaches, a lot of times they don't want to take unpaid internships or potentially complain about it. I literally quit my full-time job and left my friends and family to move somewhere where I didn't know anybody, and took that risk. And, you know, to me, it was unpaid. Yeah. But like, I didn't have to pay for it. And I was learning more in those 6 months than I did in 2 years of grad school and undergrad and everything. And, you know, that really led to really my entire career because I made good connections there.
Yeah. Now, how did you get the connection? Or are you involved with like skiing before? Or like, what's like the connection there? How'd you get that?
Yeah. So I grew up skiing and snowboarding. Okay. Used to go out to Colorado. Like, we would just find some friend that would be going out there and kind of hop on with his family. My parents aren't like huge skiers by any means. I kind of found it myself, you know, growing up. And I'd always have the season tickets to Hidden Valley and go do the whole Hidden Valley thing. But that kind of turned into doing like the, as we say in the ski world, the park rat stuff. So yeah. Doing like jumps, rails, all that kind of stuff.
That's all you can do there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you're going to go down this run for 2 seconds, or you can just hang out in the park. So that allowed, you know, led me to doing like kind of just some competitions here in St. Louis. Nothing obviously big by any means, but enough for me to enjoy the sport and love the sport. I never thought that would overlay into my love for strength and conditioning really, or even wanting to get into that field. And when I finished my master's, I was looking for a job. I was working at St. Luke's in exercise physiology for cardiac rehab. Not at all what I wanted to do, but you know, paid job. And I just saw an opening for an internship with the ski team, applied for that, actually didn't get it the first time. And then the second go around, I ended up getting it. So I just worked another year and then got it the second go after I got my master's. So, yeah.
Yeah, now skiing, just wouldn't think. Like, strength and conditioning isn't like the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of skiing.
Have you ever skied before?
Yeah. No, I mean, I've snowboarded a lot. I've actually never skied, but I've snowboarded a lot.
Oh, yeah. I used to go all the time. And that shit's a workout.
Oh yeah, for sure. I believe it. Yeah. It's just not something that like you immediately, like I wouldn't think of, you know, you think like for strength and conditioning, you think like football, you think like all these like more like power sports, I guess you'd say. I don't know. But no, that's awesome, dude. And then what kind of led you to Exos?
We wanted to move back to St. Louis, me and my wife, just to get closer to family, to have our kids and everything. And, the ski team is great, but it's a non-for-profit, doesn't pay very well. You're traveling a ton, like overseas, gone for months at a time, not conducive for having a family. So I knew that wasn't a long-term thing. It was just like something I wanted to do for at least a cycle, get to go to the Olympics and all that. So I did that, and that cycle was over, and we were kind of just looking for, you know, when we were going to move back, and she got a job offer at Boeing back in St. Louis. So we kind of used that as a catapult to move us back here. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was good friends with one of our physicians with the ski team, who actually had a lot of connections with the NHL world because he does a lot with concussions. And he kind of got me connected with some of the Blues guys, and was like, hey, are there any openings, blah, blah, blah. And that was right when they were opening up Centene Ice Center out here in Maryland Heights. And Mercy was getting a facility in there with sport performance and sports medicine. And that was kind of when that collaboration between Exos and Mercy and Centene all was happening. So my name kind of just got thrown in the hat there. You know, I knew some of the right people who knew the right people. You know, I had experience working with the Cardinals previously, so I knew their head physician, who's Dr. Mahaffey, who runs our department at Mercy as well for sports med.
He's our team doctor at Missouri State.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, he remembered me as well. And then the Lance, the head strength coach for the Cardinals now, he was an A-ball strength coach when I was rookie ball there, so we knew each other too. So it goes back to, you know, those people, you know, it's building those relationships. Yeah, you never know who you're going to, you know, not it's not even like need, but who you're going to run back into in the future. So you know, I think in the past, just building those relationships has been huge for me, clearly.
Dude, it's huge for everybody. And if they look back at anything I've done, like it all stems from some relationship by someone I knew, and it just helps a ton. But one thing I did want to ask is like, so what was it like working with at the Olympics, or like, how did that go?
Yeah, which Olympics was that?
We did Pyeongchang, so 2018 Olympics. So that was the one I was actually at. And then I was an intern before the Russia, remember what, 2014? Sochi. So I was an intern before Sochi, and then I worked and actually got to go to Pyeongchang. So I was out in Korea for like a month out there.
What's it like being at the
chaotic?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
literally all like all you can it's literally chaos every day. So it's as controlled as it can be, but there's so many people, there's so much, everybody's got their own stuff going on, right? And it's all condensed into one area. I didn't stay in the village, but I had to have access to the village and the buses and all that kind of stuff. So me and a lot of the other coaches stayed off, you know, campus, whatever you want to call it, in the village. We had these apartments we all stayed in. So there's a lot of mornings where I'd wake up and I had to like figure out how the hell I was getting to the village. Like I would hitch rides with other coaches if they had like a van, because not all of us had cars. There was multiple times I snuck on the NBC bus, pretending like I didn't speak, you know, I didn't know what they were saying, because they're like, we need your badge. And I just kept walking kind of thing. Yeah. And, multiple times where I had to get dropped off at the bobsled course at midnight so I could like walk to my house, because that was like the closest drop off from the buses. So it was just pretty chaotic all the time. Also, like, you know, you're obviously going out a lot as well and like celebrating the wins. I think one of the things that people don't really tell you, you don't think about, is when you go there, you know, it's really exciting to have your athletes win, but most of them are going to fail at their dreams. And like having a lot of those conversations, you know, like I remember specifically at half pipe, and we had two guys medal. We had a gold, silver. And then we had another guy who literally crashed all three runs, gave himself a concussion, and like didn't, it was one of the worst performances probably of his life. And it was at the Olympics. And like, it was really weird as a coach. Like you're talking to this guy and trying to help him through that. And the other side, you have these two guys that literally just won a gold medal and a silver medal on the same team technically. Right. So it was, yeah, it's pretty chaotic on a day-to-day basis. So
gotta be hard, man. Like someone just broke, you know, just failed at their dreams, like right in front of you. And then you got some people on the other side, just absolutely on cloud nine.
Yeah. It was wild.
Damn. And how long were you there?
I was in Korea for about a month. So we went there, you know, part of my job was setting up like the actual gym. So, you know, inside the village, they have a gym for everybody to use. As you can imagine, every country in the world is using that. Not really where we want to work out. So we actually will build our own facilities when we go to the Olympics. Team USA does. They build their own places where athletes can eat outside of the village too. So if you want to like go get food made by the dietitians that you know, or chefs that you know already, like our team chef, Alan, he literally got there 2 months beforehand and turned some ski shops into kitchens. And like those were around where all the coaches would live. So the athletes could come there and eat with the staff and everything outside of the village and the chaos. And then I know we actually had two gyms there. We had to order everything like a year ahead of time. We built it in Utah to make sure it would fit the area we had and like would all work out, broke it back down, put them in boxes, had to ship it on crates, which took like 6 months to get to Korea. And then I got to Korea and there was these huge crates where we had to unpack and basically build a gym like, for a month. Oh. And then part of my job was breaking it back down and shipping it back, obviously. Cool part was a lot of the Olympics will use these temporary buildings and they'll ship them between Olympics. So I know like they said that the building we were in, like the first time it was used was the, I guess, Brazil game. So it had been to like three games. So it's like these huge like wooden like, I don't know, boxes basically they put up and they just ship them around the world to different Olympics as temporary structures. And ours was paid for by Spider because they had like a Spider store and they paid for our space if they could have like a window into the gym. We had this really awkward window that like people who were like shopping in Spider would be watching us like work out, which is weird, but we got a free place to work out.
So. Yeah, I'll take it. God, that's weird. I've heard some crazy stories about the athlete village, like at least in like through the internet. Like, is it really as crazy as like,
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people in one place. So you can imagine how crazy it's going to be. And, you know, like I said, I didn't live in the village. And the games I was at, it was definitely a little bit more strict about like, we had to like sneak beer into the village and stuff. I remember, but there was a lot of people living outside of the village too. And they have these, they call them like, USA house, or these areas that basically are kind of be like places you can go celebrate with your family kind of thing. And Team USA did a good job of making it like very almost like wholesome, where you had like very nice dinners and like higher end cocktails and kind of more relaxed. But like we used to go to like Swiss house and Germany house and it was like, you know,
beer steins.
Yeah.
Like, no, it was like, like just rage.
Yeah, that's like what I've heard.
Red Bull house was what you can imagine. Oh, okay. So I had some interesting stories after Red Bull house with some of the staff as well.
I'm sure.
So, but yeah, it's a good time. Cause I mean, again, you go out and like some of your athletes are winning, you know, gold medals and stuff and like achieving some of their lifetime dreams.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're all going to go out afterwards and
party, time, man. So. Yeah.
Now as a strength coach, do you guys get any medals or anything like that or anything like as a, hey, yeah, we help train these guys to get that. Like, is there anything like that for you guys?
No, we don't have any medals. When you get there, you get like all the opening and closing ceremony gear. So I actually sold most of mine because I don't, what am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
you get a ring. So I have like a it's a different color for like staff. So I have like a staff Olympic ring. And then I actually have like my badges and everything that you had to wear to get in everywhere, your credentials. And I was big on trading like pins, which kind of sounds weird, but when you're there, like everybody has their own country's pin. So I'd see somebody from like I remember saw somebody from like Thailand, which there's like three people at the Winter Olympics from Thailand. Sure. I'm like, oh, I got to get this fucker's pin and like try to trade him my USA pin. So I had this lanyard framed in my basement with like all these pins from all these countries. And like, to me, something like that is like way cooler than like a jacket or anything. Cause it's like all that is like a story almost. And then my aerials coach, he actually had some leftover bibs. So he got my athletes to like sign all the bibs and everything. Sweet. So we have that like framed in my basement. So
yeah. Badass. And what's like training these athletes? What's that? What's like the protocol? I'm sure, I guess it's probably different for every athlete and every like sport specific, but if you can give any insight into that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's probably not as different as you'd think. Like, I mean, similar to probably what you guys are doing on a regular basis. We're going to be doing, you know, hip hinging stuff. We're going to be doing bilateral, unilateral, you know, lower pushing, upper body, horizontal, vertical, right? So you're going to get all those same standards of just general strength. I think that's one thing a lot of people kind of like have a misconception about, is they think that like that we're going to get super sport specific. I think some people do that too early, and it's like, if you're so strong and so powerful, you need to be that sport specific, then it's like, you should be a lot better athlete probably. Mm-hmm. But you know, typically it was just building those general strength, capacities. And I think, you know, for some of them, it was also trying to think about how they train too. So for instance, aerials, which is one of the sports I worked with, they go down and they do one jump.
Now aerials, just like, yeah, the big ass.
Yeah. One big ass jump. They put their hands up, they go. The guys will do, now the girls too, the guys will do triple flips with like 5 to 6 twists in there. They're all gymnast background usually,
sure.
Or like diving. so for them, it's, you know, it's a 5-10 second jump, right? Like, you don't need conditioning for that typically. But if you see how they actually train in the summer, they'll jump into a pool and they'll swim out and they'll hike all the way back up and they'll jump in a pool and they'll hike back up. They'll do it for 3 or 4 hours.
Jump.
Like off of, they have these jumps that go into water.
Like ramps, on their skis.
On their skis.
Okay.
And then they have bubbles that come up to like to break the water tension. They'll have holes drilled in their skis so that it's not as much compression when they land. Yeah. Cause they're going, you know, 60, 70 feet in the air. And so they'll practice their jumps for, you know, 3 hours, sometimes twice a day. And then they'll come lift with us. And it's like, so we have to get them prepared to be able to like do that, still like do their jumps at a high level. So sometimes it's like thinking of how you actually need them to prepare for their sport too, not necessarily just the sport itself. And then, you know, the third thing I would say is just figuring out what the common injuries are and if there's anything we can do to help potentially prevent those. You're never going to fully prevent injuries from happening. Like sports are, you know, especially at high intensity, right?
Right.
Sports at a high level, you're going to get injured at some point. But as much as we can do to try to limit those, we're going to. So some of that stuff is maybe where you get more like sport specific, and it's not necessarily for like the performance. It's just like, all right, you know, this is a common injury that's going to happen. Like for my hockey guys I work with, they strain their groin a lot, do a lot of groin stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, I would think too with those aerials, I mean, they're flying how high in the air? Like 70 feet? And
yeah.
And they're having to come down and land, the balance and strength that it takes to land. Like, I mean, obviously you got to do something pretty specific for training something like that, right?
I mean, we're just doing eccentrics, honestly. Yeah. Like a lot of depth drops, depth jumps. The aerials were always the highest strength to weight ratio athletes in the gym. So like our alpine skiers, you know, like the Bodie Millers, like those, you know, Lindsey Vonn's, she's a big chick, like she's strong, right? Like they're coming down at, you know, 80, 90 miles an hour going around turns. They have to be pretty strong to withhold those eccentric loads. But they're also big people. Like the aerials were all tiny people and they were squatting like similar weights to those guys. Like I had guys that were like 120 pounds that are like repping out 315. And it's like, because they want to be light to be able to spin faster and land well. But they also like have to have that strength, like you said,
catch themselves. Dropping.
Yeah. So it's pretty wild.
So cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So how long, so that was in what year was that? It was 2016, you said?
Yeah. The Olympics were 2018. Yeah. So yeah, something like that. 2016 to 2018, I guess I was when I was out there.
Okay. And then you transitioned to Exos and then there, is that where you kind of became this like ACL guy? Like, where that's kind of your area of expertise, if I'm not mistaken, right?
The yeah.
ACL rehab.
Yeah. So really when I was with the ski team, I would say that started just because skiing, to give you like an idea, people always talk about how like young female athletes tear their ACLs a lot. For like women's soccer in high school, it's like a 4% ACL injury rate.
All the time. I can name like five people.
Yeah, exactly. So that's considered like a high injury rate for ACLs.
Why is like that 4%. So high in females versus males?
Well, that's a whole other debate probably. Okay. But I mean, there's some people think it's related to potentially hormone changes. Like actually I have a friend that was studying how like the cycles, women's cycles can actually adjust their injury rates happen and stuff. And there's like higher spikes in injury rates when they're actually like on their periods. Really? Just because of the hormone changes. Like, you're going to have more laxed joints as you have higher estrogen. You have estrogen receptors on your ACL well, which is going to make it more laxed, potentially put it at risk. That's also like theory. It's not 100% been proven. Women also tend to have wider hips with like knees coming in. So that's going to be more stress on the knee. They call it Q angle. All these things kind of point to like the anatomical differences, but really to me, I think the biggest difference that I've seen as a strength coach is like most of us, like as you know, we're all pretty similar age. Like we were growing up as male athletes, like strength and conditioning was put on us early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like, do you remember, like at least when I was in high school, a lot of the female athletes, like they didn't lift.
No.
Right. They went and ran. You played soccer, you ran. And it's like that transition is starting to happen, which is really good to see. But I think a lot of it is that, man. Like they need to start strength conditioning earlier, just like male athletes. They're competing at a high level, and you just don't see that as often. So I think some of it is just that strength to weight ratio as well, and being able to control the body on like eccentric loads, because that's when that ACL rupture usually happens, is like planting your foot and trying to stop, right?
Yeah, the like quick cutting.
Yeah, exactly.
Like people really like tear it.
Yeah. So yeah, I kind of became that that ACL whatever guy when I was in Utah, because skiing, free skiing, which is like half pipe X game style. Their ACL injury rate was 20%.
Oh wow,
which is absurd.
Yeah, yeah. Like now is skiing more injury prone than snowboarding?
Yeah, very.
That would make sense. Yeah, yeah.
Specifically for the knees, but I mean, because basically, you know, it was a lot of it was stuff we couldn't prevent. Like you could get somebody as strong as possible, but if you have somebody falling on a jump at a high speed, and you know they tighten their skis as much as they can so they don't pop off because they're spinning, and they land and catch an edge on one ski. That whole
heel hook themselves.
Exactly. That whole lever's rotating your entire leg. Your knee's not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So most of them happen in like those type of situations. It wasn't typically like somebody just landing.
Yeah.
Unless they were really weak and young or something. But I kind of quickly had to become an ACL expert because I was pretty much at all times working with a handful of ACL people. And, you know, I'm not a physical therapist, but we had our PTs there, but we'd be doing strength conditioning work 2 weeks out from surgery with them. And then here in the, you know, the real world where people in high school will have injuries, typically they'll go see their ortho, they'll go do physical therapy. Insurance will run out at 5 or 6 months for an ACL. And the insurance is like, okay, you're good to go because, you know, they can stand up off the fucking toilet and like they can walk.
They can't get back to skiing down a mountain or they can't.
And insurance doesn't care about that.
Yeah. They don't give a fuck.
So, you know, that's really what Mercy was looking for with us, was finding out somebody that they could send people to, you know, either at that mark where insurance runs out or even earlier. So I work with people earlier as well. We just try to bridge that gap from, you know, rehab to performance actually.
And what do you mean earlier? What do you mean?
Like, you know, a lot of times some therapists I talk to, they're thinking, hey, once insurance runs out, then you'll go see Brett versus
So
can start working with them
right
2 weeks out.
Okay.
Yeah. And I always tell the therapist, if they don't know me, I'm like, I can take that strength conditioning stuff off your plate and you can work on what's next. You don't have to worry about, is this kid doing what he's supposed to at home? You don't have to worry about spending, you know, 15 minutes with them every session, making sure you're getting these squats in and stuff. Like, you know, he's doing that with me. You can work. And then they can also potentially see that therapist less often per week. So they can see them longer. Right.
And also speeds up that process.
Yeah.
I feel like I've experienced some physical therapy for the first time in like the last few years when I had my first knee surgery. And I feel like that is one area that the physical therapy, like it just varies, like no matter who you go to, it's like, it could be so like two, you could have very, very different experiences depending on who you go to. Like I went somewhere that was very like, I mean, every time I left there, I was drenched in sweat. Like it was more like a strength and conditioning style workout. But then I'd be talking to other people that have done things. It's like, oh no, they had me like on a table and like, I'd like just doing like the heel slides and stuff like that. And it's like, I feel like that's not getting you back to where you want to go. You know, I just feel like the variance there is so, so large.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a huge problem in the industry. I would say, and you know, we see that all the time, and you know, I don't need to call out any specific companies, but like there's a lot of larger companies that do like that, the private sector, thing, and even hospitals where you come in and like, you know, if my mom's getting therapy, that's different. She's going to come in and you know, get heat put on, get some mobility, whatever. But like somebody that's not even like in a sport, but just, you know,
young and
yeah, younger person, or they're yeah. like, I'm gonna, even if they're in their 50s and they just like to go like hiking and stuff, right? Like that person should be doing strength training.
For sure.
And I think part of that is that that hasn't been taught a ton in physical therapy schools. It's definitely changing, which is awesome to see. And a lot of the therapists are wanting to know that now, especially the younger ones. But you do see a lot of like therapists that will just do like the mini bands. They'll just yeah. do whatever. And that's pretty much it. Or because insurance takes so much money from each individual person that's going to see the therapist, like that those therapists are having to see three people per hour, which means like you come in, you're going to get put on a table with a heating pad while that person is training somebody else. And then somebody else is doing like, you know,
so
you
can get three doing stretching or whatever. Yeah. Hour.
And it's like, you're not really getting what you need to versus if you go see like our sports, obviously I'm biased, but our sports medicine staff, like they're going to see you for an hour. Most of them, if not all of them, have worked like in a team setting with strength and conditioning coaches as well. Like whether it be, you know, we have guys that have worked MLS, guys that have worked MLB, kind of everything in between. They'll actually be like over in the squat racks with us, like doing stuff. And we'll do continuing education with our therapist to like show them stuff we know, like, hey, this is how I program this and this is why. And then vice versa, like they're also talking to us about the therapy. So we understand more about their process too. So I think that's more or less like what needs to happen. And you don't really see that. I think we're a pretty rare breed, like in the medical field, like in a hospital setting. So Mercy is pretty good in that aspect. Because there's not really any other of those, at least in St. Louis, that I know of. Now, you do see that sometimes more in the private sector, but that's usually more like cash-based and stuff. So there's some good clinics out there that do work with therapists or have therapists that are strength coaches as well.
The insurance thing, that's a whole nother racket, yeah. Dude. I'm dealing with that right now. That's a big pain
for the knees.
Well, yeah, I went and got an MRI a couple months ago, and all of a sudden, I pay like $336 a month for my health insurance. You know, I'm self-employed. I thought I was getting good insurance, and then turns out when I get this MRI, I get a bill back for $4,800 just for the MRI, and I'm like, the fuck. So you know, I'm kind of going back and forth with them right now. So I'm hoping to figure that out, but I'm like, okay, because well, I do have a re-tore my meniscus, so I'm like, you know, they could go in there and clean it out, and you know, he said it would be like a 4-week recovery, and I could be back on the mats and everything. So you know, that's what I'd like to do, but I'm like, man, well, I can live with it right now if I have to, but I'm like, boy, I mean, if I could get this fixed, I would prefer to do that. But like the fact that I got charged almost $5,000 just for the MRI, I'm like, dude. And one of the frustrating parts is they said that they had to inject this because I had this, it's the same knee I had surgery.
Contrast.
Yeah. They put the contrast in there. And dude, that was a fucking mess. Cause it took like 4 different people to like get it in. Like they were like, they just couldn't figure out how to get it in my knee for some reason. So my knee was more sore for like 2 days after that than any of the knee pain I've ever had, you know, just from them having this giant ass needle in there, moving it around, trying to get it for like 30 minutes. And of that $4,800 bill, I'm pretty sure like that was like 2,800 of it when I looked at like the itemized section. I'm like, fuck, yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah. We had a call and complained about our, we just gave birth, wife
yeah.
just gave birth 7 months ago to our newest daughter. And yeah, I've been dealing with insurance with like just going down the itemized list, and they're like we've had like 4 charges for like different anesthesia, and I'm like, one person doing it. And they're like, well, they had to have somebody else watch it. I'm like, well, they didn't.
So yeah, there was only one person
like,
there.
Well, no, they have to have somebody else watch it. There was another person there. I'm like, there wasn't. Yeah. I was there.
I was right there.
And it's just like basically my word versus theirs. Yeah, a lot of that kind of shit.
Dude, it's insurance is just such a mess, man.
It's a scam.
It is.
I just been going to Dr. Brett for Cairo, and was doing some PT with him as well. And then they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we got a, you know, insurance only covered $5 was what they covered. It was $5 for my
insurance covered overall. $300 of that. And so the bill really was $5,100 and they covered 300 of it.
Nice, man. We got some coverage.
Some coverage. Yeah. Like, oh,
that's one month of payment. For yeah. Right?
Like, fuck, dude.
Should get into the insurance business, guys.
Dude, yeah, I mean, really should. Yeah, speaking of, you do have another business venture as well. You're an owner of Clean Eats. Yep. How did that come about?
So, going back to my baseball days, when I was a strength coach for the White Sox, all 3 seasons I was there, I actually had a catcher on my team, Casey Schroeder. You know, he was a younger prospect, and then like my last year there, he was like our bullpen catcher and kind of knew, saw the writing on the wall, right? So he just lifted with me like every day, and we became pretty good friends. And you know, he was the type of guy that was always in the weight room, like asking questions about strength and conditioning. So, you know, we got pretty close from that, stayed in touch after I left and after he retired. And he was smart enough to actually like leave before, you know, he had lost all of his money. He kind of saw he wasn't going to make it. So he took a signing bonus, and he was actually one of the first franchisees of Clean Eats up in Columbus. So background about Clean Eats: franchise started in Edwardsville. Donnie and Yvonne started it. They're born and raised Edwardsville. Then they moved out to Wilmington, opened one out there. Their friend kept running the one in Edwardsville, and they were just like thinking that they were going to have a couple cafes, and they eventually had 10 of them. And then they got approached by somebody to franchise, and they were like, all right, let's look into that. And they did. Casey was one of the first ones in Ohio. He now owns 5 up there because he's crazy. He reached out to me. I think we were just shooting the shit one night during COVID. The gyms were shut down. I didn't really know what my future was going to be in the gym industry. Like, nobody knew, right? Yeah. And he was talking about how in the thick of COVID, he was at 80% of his standard revenue because, like, all those meals are takeout. Yeah. So people are just coming anyway. And that was still open. So the fact that it was, like, COVID-proof, I guess, as much COVID-proof as you can be, was very enticing to me as well. So I talked to a close buddy of mine, Zach Niels, who is a merger and acquisitions lawyer. And we had talked about always working together in some capacity, and kind of were able to talk with Casey. And he, you know, if anybody's ever looked into a franchise, it can be scary because they give you general numbers, right? And it's like, you don't really know what you're going to make. And you're giving them like 50 grand to get started, basically. And then you have to like figure all this stuff out. But with Casey, he was like, opened up his books, and he was basically like, you know, this is how much it cost me to get started. This is how much money I made the first year. This is where I was for X, Y, and Z. Obviously, that changes a little bit after COVID, but even with the profit margins changing a little bit, we're still looking at our profitable margin. So it made sense business-wise. And the next step for me was like, I'm going to go and actually like try these meals to make sure it's something I actually would like. So I went out to Edwardsville and got some meals from Sarah out there, and I literally was going out there every week after that until we like fully got involved and signed on. So it was pretty crazy. Found we got an SBA loan, and then Casey actually gave us some money to get going as well. So he's a minority partner as well, and he kind of just gave us a lot of a lot of things we could do just to kind of hit the ground running. So stuff, you know, that he's ran into in the past, and you know, we didn't have to like have those same issues right away. So it was nice.
Yeah, dude, that's amazing. Awesome. So that opened in 2022?
Yep, May 2022. Okay. So yeah, this May will be 3 years, which is wild.
Sweet.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What's been the hardest part of owning a restaurant?
I think just dealing with the people and by that I mean the staff. Honestly, going into it, I probably thought it was going to be dealing with like customers, but most customers are great. Like you're always going to have
people to complain about one thing.
Yeah, like people can complain about certain things here and there. And I mean, there's definitely valid complaints too. And like stuff happens. I totally understand that. But most people are, I always think like most people are good people. And, you know, I think we have a good product. So we've never really had any issues with that. But it's just staffing. I think a lot of that is like, you know, when you are bringing on a lot of like part-time workers and stuff, they're never going to care as much as you care. And I totally understand that. Even your management is never going to care as much as you care because you own the freaking business. But it's like, yeah, that's always been the biggest issue. There's always at least one person I have an issue with at all times, it seems like.
Yeah.
I've had to go through handful of GMs, which at one point, again, like you look back on yourself and you're like, is this a problem from my problem? Am I interviewing the wrong people? Am I like setting them up for failure?
My system's not right.
Exactly.
It's like all these things are like, man, what am I doing wrong? Because I, like I said, we talked before the show, I spent 10 years in the restaurant industry and like, can definitely, I know some of those pains for sure. Like it's,
yeah. But it's I ended up talking to a lot of the other franchisees, and most of them had the same issues. So that almost like made it feel better to me that it wasn't like, all right, it's not something that I'm potentially doing. But you know, it kind of went through a lot of those hardships and got to the point now where we have awesome staff, and you know, kind of had to find those people that are gonna, you know, naturally work hard, and then you reward them, and like, you know, if I find a good person, like I'm gonna overpay them to keep them, right?
For sure.
So that's kind of what we've done. It's just taken us longer than I think I originally planned, but we're in a good spot.
You think you guys will open up any more locations? Or
I mean, that was the original plan. The cost of everything has pretty much doubled, so that makes it a little bit more challenging. Part of that is just the general economy right now. We got when we got started, it like hadn't really construction hadn't skyrocketed yet. We did a lot of the stuff ourselves. It was a second generation restaurant. So we,
what was it before over there?
It was an old Chinese restaurant. Right. That was, yeah, it was interesting. Like, yeah, dude, oh my God,
bro. We that's another thing we have in common. The last restaurant I did, we spent a night, we did a 9 month rehab on it, and it was an old Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
Makes you never want to eat a Chinese restaurant.
No, man.
It was, I saw some shit, dude.
I seen some shit.
Like, dude, I remember we pulled this stove off the wall, and there was like five mouse or rats or mice, like petrified in grease.
Dude, it's the same thing. So the reason we got it was because there was a hood in there. It was a pretty new hood. It had a walk-in freezer and fridge, and the walls, they were gutted, but the walls of the walk-in freezer and fridge were there. That really didn't save us money, but at that time, because of COVID, it was going to take a year for that to get to in ship there. To us. Oh. So we were like, we need to find a place that already fucking has one.
Yes.
And like, we can refurbish it if we need to, which we did a little bit. We put new units in and everything, but like, the hood was brand new, basically. We went in there, and like, there's a wall underneath the hood, like a steel wall. So we had to remove that. And that's where it was just like petrified, like rat
grease.
Bones. And you're like, what the fuck?
Dude, what is this?
Yeah, we ripped everything out of that place. Yes. And then they were supposed to jet the pipes. This is a good story about owning a restaurant.
Yeah.
They were supposed to jet the pipes, like cleared everything, because there's probably a lot of grease in there from our Chinese restaurant. Mm-hmm. We don't have like any grease. Like, we use bison. We don't have grease traps. We don't have any of that shit. Bison is the only thing we have that has grease in it, and it's very low and fat anyway. So definitely didn't come from us, right? Like, the extra fat. But it was the day before we opened, and one of our drains started backing up, and I had to call my buddy who's a plumber. His dad came out there the next morning. It's like 7 a.m. and raining the day before we opened our restaurant for the first time, and he just had knee surgery. Somebody had paved over like the hole where you can actually like jet the pipes from the back. So he's like, yeah, you're gonna have to get on the roof. I can't climb a ladder right now. So I went on the roof with like the jet, and he's like, he has me on the phone call. I'm up on the roof in the rain. He's like telling me what to do. And I'm like jetting the pipe from the top of the roof in the pouring rain. Welcome to opening a restaurant.
Yeah,
man.
Welcome to opening a restaurant. Dude, I can't tell you, dude, I've done some, like when we were doing that restaurant, like we were trying to save all the money we could. You know, it was a 50-gallon grease trap, and I cleaned that thing out by hand, like with a fucking like dollar store pitcher, just fucking pitchers of grease.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, oh God.
Just dumping it into 5 gallon buckets, and then just
there's some gross stuff. And I mean, I talk to anybody that's starting a business now, and I'm just like you can't even look at the whole picture. Like, you need to
one bite at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I looked back at the checklist of all the shit we had to do to open this restaurant, like I probably wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
If I'm like, all right, I got to do this today, I got to do this tomorrow and stuff. And you know, you look back and, you know, whatever happens with this, at the end of the day, like, cause we're only a couple years in, like shit can still hit the fan. We can still lose money. I still owe money to a bank, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, like, I've learned so much just from running this business, and if nothing else, like, gain confidence of like, I can actually just have an idea and go like accomplish that. And as long as I just do one step at a time, I can get there, which I think is a huge different mindset shift for me.
Yeah. That was our whole, like, that was me and my business partner on that. That was our like whole motto throughout the whole thing. It's literally why I have this elephant tattooed on my arm is, the whole motto was, all right, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. So just anytime we do something big, you know, we got something signed with the city, it was like, him and I would look at each other, another bite, you know, like, and it was just until we finally opened it up. And yeah, it was fucking tough. it's a tough industry to be in, but like, dude, sounds like you guys are fucking killing it. And especially like partnering with all these gyms in town and doing, you know, talk on that, I guess. So you've been kind of just reaching out to local gyms here and you know, trying to partner with them.
Yeah. I mean, we're small business down here in South County, so you know, I know like just a lot of people don't even know about us. When I think about the total number of people in St. Louis and how many like meals we sell on a weekly basis, and like what our, you know, we have like maybe 200 people come in, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, there's a million people in this city.
Right,
it's like the math should be that we should be doing a lot better than this. So that's always something that's in my head is always frustrating, but I know that's probably everybody's business.
You also got to think it's a niche thing.
Yeah,
like you got to think of how many people like work out and count their macros.
Well, yeah, like, but I mean, you know, that's the other thing is, now that we're getting off track here, is when I first opened up, I was really marketing towards like weight loss, fitness, people counting their macros, because that's how I saw it. Probably 75-80% of the people that come in are just like, I just don't want to make dinner. They don't give a shit about the macros. They're just like, I just want something that I know is like real food. It's not fast food.
Sure.
Like it's actually rice, chicken, and vegetables, you know?
Right.
Like there's no added salt, no added sugar, nothing like that. And I just don't want to make dinner.
But do you guys do catering?
Yeah. Yeah, we do catering. We actually, we're like fifth in the franchise in catering. We do a ton of catering.
I was going to say, that seems like that would be a big...
Lots of wraps and bowls.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what were we talking about before?
I don't even remember.
Blacked out.
Murphy Wine, where were we?
Yeah. I don't remember.
Talking about Greece and one bite at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The big picture. And
oh, we're talking about the gym stuff.
Gym stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, for us, you know, that's been a big part of it is just getting out there doing grassroots marketing, partnering with different gyms, different companies all over, trying to get really our name and our meals into as many people's hands as possible. So part of that is, you know, which is one of the ways that we met was the Feed the First Responders. So, you know, your guys' group bought meals from us wholesale and gave them to a bunch of first responders. First responders, I think you guys got like 250 meals from us. And then I go out and I give meals all the time to different firehouses, police stations, whatever. You know, one, it's giving back. Two, it's also just a way for us, honestly, to have some marketing as well.
Yeah.
And then we do this stuff with the gyms where we go through and I'll just meet different gym owners or, you know, GMs, whoever. And I try to have a set up a time where we can have like a free workout with our staff. Whether it be in one of their classes or I was at Exist a few weeks ago and I just ran it. Obviously, I just wrote a program for my staff. We'll usually give the gym like some type of raffle for their members and then we'll just like post about them too. So they get some marketing for it. They get some free stuff they can raffle off. My employees will get a free workout at different gyms. You know, I get to go work out and we spread the word.
We have to bring a friend this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be a good day to go.
Yeah. If you guys want to come. They're always inviting or telling us to bring people, especially to our Saturdays, just because it's a good easy intro workout into the CrossFit world.
I think me and Gina are going on Saturday.
If you guys want to go.
Yeah, for sure.
And bring some of your employees as well.
Yeah, it's fun.
So yeah, it's a good time. It's a partner workout. So
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've done CrossFit similar stuff before.
Something like that.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. You've worked out.
I've worked out.
You've worked out before. So how'd you get into jiu-jitsu, man?
So like I said, I had a background in wrestling growing up.
Okay. Where'd you go to high school?
Parkway South.
Okay.
And I did wrestling, I think it was like sixth grade.
Okay.
I stopped my junior year, which I was halfway decent. Like I had most pins and my most wins like freshman year and all this kind of stuff. And then I was trying to get bigger for football, which is my main sport. And my coaches kept on being like, I remember going into my sophomore year, they're like, all right, well, we won't make you cut weight and we'll like lift more in season than we didn't. So the next year I was like, I'm not coming back because like I wanted to try to play football in college, which ended up not working out.
What weight class were you?
I did, what was it? 171 freshman year and then 189 and 215, which is pretty much where I'm at now.
Yeah.
But I did that. So I grew up always, you know, being halfway decent at wrestling and enjoyed doing it. And then I kind of just completely got out of it. I've always had to do like something competitive, whether it be like weightlifting, powerlifting. I played rugby for like 7 years.
Oh, really?
I feel like I always have like something that I like to do that's competitive. And part of that is that gets me training in the gym too. Like I do enjoy working out. But
when
just like anybody
something to work out for a little motivation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I need something.
Yeah.
That's all I did for several years. I mean, pretty much like all through college and then a few years out of college and everything, all I did was just lift weights. And part of me was like, oh, should I do like a bodybuilding show? But like, man, that just never sounded like fun to me, like standing up on a stage and flexing. I mean, no shade to any of those guys that do that because it's fucking super impressive. And like the shape that they get in is crazy. But like, I don't know. I wanted something more like to do, you know? No, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I always was, too. Like, I needed to train for some type of, like, physical output. I mean, it's the same thing. Like, you have people that train to run a, you know, half marathon. It's like, gives you a reason to
run.
Actually go.
Well, that was part of the reason why I stopped working out when I retired from baseball. Was, like, I didn't have anything to work out for. I went 7 years.
Dude.
Yeah. And then
that's wild.
Yeah. And then started playing hockey again and realized, like, oh, shit, I need to do something. Like, this isn't going to work. And the divorce, and I'm like, man, I'm fat. No one wants to date a fat person.
I think you just described how people tear their Achilles.
Yeah. It's like
they were athletic, they stopped, and then they, you know, turned 30 and jump back into something.
Jump back in.
Knock on wood, no injuries. No injuries. But also back in the gym working out. There
Looking for an outlet, you got just walked into Revive one day, or how did that, how did that come about?
Actually, I worked with Stu.
Okay.
Has he been on this? I don't know if he has.
No, he hasn't. I'd like to have him on. We had Adam scheduled at one point, Adam Meredith. Then we had to reschedule. So he's coming on in a couple weeks.
Nice. So yeah, I worked with Stu at Output when I first moved back here.
Okay.
We had a connection just through an intern I had with the ski team that trained with him.
I did my my knee rehab at that place. Output. Yeah. And then now she's moved since then. Yeah.
So,
Optimal Movement.
Yeah. Taylor, I know Summers. Them. Yeah. Taylor. Yeah. I know her too.
Yeah.
They do a lot of ACL stuff as well there. She's awesome. Great, she's one of the ones I was talking about. That's like, there's good clinics that still do.
Well, like I said, every time I'd left there, I'm drenched in, like we had it was like a hell of a workout every time, you know?
Yeah. That's like, but she knew, that's what it should be. And that's what, like, what we want to do too. So,
right. Cause we're hard, you know?
But yeah, so I knew Stu, trained with him a little bit, worked out at Output. And he kind of connected me with Adam, just not even like jujitsu wise, just working out. And then Adam had me on his podcast randomly 4 years ago, maybe when he was doing Outside Perspective.
Yeah.
And we kind of just stayed in touch cause we hit it off. And, you know, at that time I told him I had done, some jujitsu when I was out in Utah, just through an intern that kind of brought me out there. And so he opened up his space in St. Anne for Imposed Will. They have a padded room. And he's like, you should come out and train with us one day. He's kind of was always trying to get me back in it. And I just always had excuses. Like, I got kids, don't have time, blah, blah, blah. So I rolled out there with them for a couple days. And they were kind of just obviously beating the shit out of me. But you know how it is, like rolling with the higher belts. Like, they're going to teach you stuff. They're not going to, like, choke you out, right?
Right. The good people.
Yeah. 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 Adam wasn't choking me out. So it was good. And he was like, why aren't you training? I don't know. Like, you need to go somewhere. So he was kind of just like he was the one that was pushing me towards it. So he's the one, I told him I was, you know, if I did it, I would probably want to compete just because that's who I am. Yeah. He's like, you should go check out Revive. Like, most of the guys there will compete and stuff. And I just walked in the door there and met Junior, who's, I do the lunch classes. So Junior usually runs those. Nick is awesome there as well, but I typically can't take his classes as much just because of the kids.
Evenings.
Yeah. But yeah, both those guys are badass. So it's been fun learning from them, and got my blue belt back in May.
Congrats.
About 2 weeks before I did my first competition. So thanks, Junior, for bumping me up right before. I still won, so
it. You should have been there anyway.
He was like, we had a belt ceremony and I missed it. Next day he was like, I was gonna give you an extra stripe, but you keep choking out my blue belt. So it's like, I'm just gonna give you a blue belt. I'd been rolling for with Utah, and that would have been about a year and a half or 2 years.
Okay.
So about on par.
Yeah, it's on par. For sure.
So I got that, and I competed in IBJJ.
The IBJJ. I would watch you compete. Awesome. Hey, no, that dude was tough.
Frustrating.
It was frustrating. Mm-hmm. I mean, dude, it was.
I learned shit.
You learned. you win or you learn.
Dude, yeah. I had that guy. He apparently had won a national championship in wrestling.
Big boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was thick dude.
Yeah, I knew he was going to come at me because he's wrestling background.
Because he pulled, right?
So I pulled guard, and I like held him.
Closed
and
guard for a hot minute.
He's like 4.5 minutes. My adductors were toast. And I just remember hearing Junior and Nick like yelling. Like, I had a cross choke, which again, like, I think what I learned was, like, I was so worried about his game that I didn't play my game. And I don't typically pull guard. I also don't usually like hold that position. I don't go for cross chokes.
Right.
Like, all those things I did. And I tried to cross choke and I just burned out my forearms. And I had T-Rex arms for the rest of it. And at that point I had like one advantage point and I was just fatigued. And I think I also didn't even know the score. I didn't even know the time, which is another thing to think about.
Yeah.
And I saw like an opening for like an arm bar and I went for it and missed and he passed and got 2 points, like 15 seconds left, 20 seconds left.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So
that was your first comp?
Yeah. Oh, that was my second one.
Second one.
Yeah. The, was it American Grappler?
Oh yeah.
AGF. I did that in May. That was my first comp. Which was fun. I won the adult. And then I went to the Open, and they had two guys for, not adult, sorry, Masters, because I'm fucking old. Won the Masters, and then I went to the Open weight class, and the two guys that were supposed to be in it both hurt. So they're like, do you want to go to the adult, which is the younger guys?
I'm like,
I guess so. So I went down there and beat the first guy, and then I went to the championship against a dude, Chad, who actually rolls at Revive. with me anyway. And I was like, great, I've never beat you. This is going to be awesome. So I went in, I had all the old guys from Revive like rooting for me because they wanted the old guy to win the adult league.
They want the old guy to beat the young guy.
Fucking Chad put me in arm lock, which that was about right.
On par. Damn. Yeah, dude. Well, dude, it's so fun. You're competing here soon too, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks, the AGF. Yeah. Are you doing that one or anything?
No,
you've been doing a ton this.
I just did these two. I'm dealing with like a little bit of an elbow injury. I got both my knees are giving me trouble. I'm falling apart right now.
So you're only, 31?
31, yeah.
Got a long time.
Yeah.
I know, exactly. So I'm like, I need to give it a couple months of like, just, well, because I did that, CXBJJ a couple weeks ago, three or four weeks ago now. This dude put me in this really, it was weird. The weirdest like submission. He had me in like a scarf hold, like arm bar, but from bottom. Like I got submitted from top side control. Yeah, so
see that one that often.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
We were all confused when we were watching it. Like, we got that video of it. I'm like, what the fuck happened?
Dude, it's like this guy's very good at like this just really weird move. And like you wouldn't have seen it coming. Basically put me in an Americana. And I mean, he went 0 to 100 right away and like pop in my elbow. I'm like, you know, so now I'm just dealing with I've been training on it and it's like weird because it doesn't really, like, it doesn't hurt right now. But then the second I start like rolling and people start grabbing on my arms and stuff, it's like, starts getting sore again. And
it's
like,
right. I'm beat up right now too.
You know, and I'm just like, all right, I feel like competing right now is just probably not the best bet. I just need to just like chill for a couple months. And
kind of separated my shoulder a couple weeks ago, which I've done rugby a bunch, my right side. So my left side just feels like a grade one or something. Nothing too bad. First to touch, you know, good times. Yeah. Definitely tweaked my oblique like 2 weeks ago. And that's now like, or 2 months ago. And that's came back and is now like into my back.
Dude, the obliques and ribs are like, it's such a common thing in jiu-jitsu, but like.
I was rolling yesterday and I felt good rolling. And then I got home. Terrible. So I'm going to try to hit it hard this week and the next week go mellow and then try to heal up a little bit before the tournament. So.
Yeah, dude, I think it's crazy because like it always is, at least for me, whenever. Like if I hurt something or something happens like in training, like, oh, that wasn't that bad. But then I wake up the next day and I'm like, oh, fuck, what did I do? Or I like get out of bed and I forget that I hurt like somebody had me in an ankle lock and I didn't, you know, I didn't tap right away and I probably should have tapped sooner, but then, oh, it's fine. And then it's fine that night because you're until you like cool down and you're like, oh, fuck, I do. You
know? Like, that only gets worse, dude. I'm 36. But and Pat, you did. You're starting new jiu-jitsu too, right?
Started it this summer, and then hockey started back up, so I put it on pause. I do. I miss it, and I want to get back into it. It's just with hockey's always been a love of mine. Yeah. So that was like one of the first things I did. Well, I shouldn't say the first thing, but like one of the first activities I got in after retiring from baseball. I mean, it took me a couple years. I would skate here and there every once in a while, but really. Picked it back up in 2021, and since then I've been playing on two teams ever since, and that's twice a week. And extend the divorce, and then the kids' schedule, it just makes it tough.
Yeah,
getting out there and trying
to CrossFit
3 times a week, hockey twice a week, coach a baseball team, two kids. So it's just like, where do I fit jiu-jitsu in?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I said, it's. My love for hockey's always been there, and I've always like when you asked me when I was a little kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'm like NHL hockey player. Like that was my thing, and just happened to be good at baseball. and so yeah, so I when I had the opportunity to jump back in, I went all in, and I that's like it's tough for me to give that up, and it's a hell of a workout.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if you guys have ever played hockey before, but like you guys talk about being sore after that, like the next day, like my body is, and that's even with training. All the stuff that I'm doing with CrossFit and all that, but like I'll still wake up the next day and my body's just fucking hurting all like head to toe, like everything's sore just because it's a total body workout and constantly stopping and starting. And you're just on a dead sprint for, and men's league, you know, it's not, you're not taking short shifts. Like you're out there sometimes and sometimes shit, you don't even have a full team and you're out there. You got, you know, 7 guys, so you're on the ice for the majority of the time, and I mean it's just a hell of a workout. So it's kind of taken away from any ability to get back into jiu-jitsu. And you know, season ends in March, and maybe that's what my routine will be. We'll go April through September for jiu-jitsu, and then hockey October through that. I mean, no, I'm not gonna progress as fast as most, but hey, at least it's still doing something. Yeah. So
I go and I don't feel like I progress. So
yeah.
It's fine. Me too. I'll be like, that's because there's some days you just go in there and you just get your fucking ass kicked.
Well, shit, that's all I did for the first 3 months that I was there was just go in and get my ass kicked.
Well, when you begin,
it's just normal. And I was like, man, this is fucking great. But yeah, it was nice. Like, just because of the schedule change. And like, so when I started, baseball was just ramping up. So like I had tournaments and games and all that stuff going on. And so I was trying, like, I couldn't make the nighttime classes, which is when the, was it basics or basics?
Basics yeah.
was. And so I did like two or three basics classes. And the next thing you know, like I couldn't do anything. They're like, oh, just come to fundamentals. And so I go from rolling with nothing but beginners and white belts to blue belts and beyond. And just getting absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, because at Watson's, it's, with it being a lot bigger than Revive, you know, Kyle's been around a lot longer. He's got bigger school, and so he puts you through kind of like a, you know, 3 month. You're in like what he calls the basics class, where you're just basically in there with anybody who's been in there 3 months or less. And now that's the class I used to coach. I coached that for about 2.5 years, but then once we had the second baby, I had to like give that up just because time. I was like, yep. I just can't be gone two nights out of the week. It's tough. Can't leave her to just do that all alone. So, yeah.
That's why I do the lunch classes.
Yeah, that's what I do now. I do. Yeah, we've got 10 a.m. classes with an 11 a.m. open mat right afterwards, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Yeah, dude. Because that's what I, those are Mondays and Fridays. That's when I go because Wednesdays we're here, obviously. So, So, what's your like weekly schedule like? Is this one something I'm always curious about, and something I personally am like always in like a dilemma with is like splitting up my like strength and conditioning with my jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. I mean, I try to like at minimum get 3 lifts in a week. So, I mean, okay. That's the thing we were talking about beginning with like the time. Like when I was first talking with Adam, like, I don't have time for this. It's like, dude, you lift 6 days a week.
Right.
Maybe like I wasn't lifting for any reason. So I was like, okay, I could just lift less and go to jiu-jitsu. And that started, you know how it is. It's like, all right, I'll go jiu-jitsu once a week. Okay. Well, I'm going to go jiu-jitsu twice a week. Actually, I'm going to go jiu-jitsu 3 times a week.
Yeah.
So now it's pretty much like a 3-3 split.
That's
usually
where I'm at, yeah.
You know, if I'm feeling good, which I'm not right now, but if my body's feeling good, there's, you know, I'll try to get like a lift in on one of the days when I actually, well, so there's a couple guys at Revive on like a Tuesday or Thursday, usually in the afternoon. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I don't have a ton going on like at work, like meeting wise, so I can kind of fit stuff in. So I'll go in. If I'm feeling good, I'm like, hey, somebody want to come lift? And I'll have some of those guys come back to send team with me. And we'll just get like a little group lift in.
Sweet.
And so if I'm doing 4 days a week, that's usually how it is. The last like month, I feel like Saturday and Sunday is like the days I'll actually get my lifts in because that's like the only time I have. But on a normal week, you know, Monday, I'll come through. I'll do like a total body push. I like to do like total push, total pull splits usually. And then usually I'll get to I'll do total pull. Jitsu Friday, I kind of just do like total body, more circuit style. And I'll usually get jujitsu open mat on Saturday or something. If I want to get another lift in, I can do
Sundays. Okay. So. Good. Well, hey, one thing you should always, we train on Saturday mornings also, and sometimes Sundays at my buddy's place up the street from here. And he's a roofing company, but he has like giant space, just like matted out that his son coaches some off season wrestling there. And so like, we have the lockbox code, and we'll come up there and train on Saturday morning. So yeah, for sure.
I usually go up to Revive on Saturdays anyway. What's
nice about it is, I don't know. I mean, it might work better. I don't know if it would work good for your schedule or not, but we do it like early in the morning, like 7:30, 8:00.
Oh yeah.
And so it's like, we're done by like 9:30. Yeah. And it's like, get the rest of your day, especially for me with my job, you know, Saturdays are prime time, house showing time. And like the class at Watson's is like 11 to 1. And I'm like, it's like right in the middle of the prime, you know.
Yeah,
that's when people want to look at houses. Or
that's where Revive is, 11-1. I'll just bring my daughter up there usually, though, to give my wife like a break from at least one of them.
Yeah.
And she'll just play with the heavy bags for an hour.
How old's your oldest?
3. Okay. So she always asks if she can go to fighting class with me.
Sick. Fighting class. Yeah. My son, it's like his new thing is, you know, he's always wanting to wrestle and wanting to fight. Neon belly. He always runs up and like puts his like jumps on my stomach. Neon belly. Or like, I'm gonna put you in my guard. It's like his new thing he says, and like it's so funny. But like, dude, the other night at soccer, we just started him back again at the Kickaroos, and him and this other kid were wrestling, and he fucking bit a kid. Oh god, dude. And it's like, talk about like embarrassing. And like, Oh, but like Gina's out on the field with him because we have, I'm with the youngest on the sidelines because he's like a total mama's boy. He wants mom over me all the time. And so Gina's out there with him and they're, you know, the kid bites the kid and they bring the kid off. And you know, Gina was like, oh, I don't think they seem that upset. I go, oh no, I was sitting right there. They were not happy. You know? Like, of course they're going to be nice to you, like right in front of your face. But then when, you know, it was just like, oh shit.
Jesus.
Yeah. So that's fun.
Yeah. It's fun though. Cause Connor, while I was doing jiu-jitsu, was getting into it and we would like, I would show him stuff just to kind of practice on my own. And like, obviously they always say the best way to learn is to teach. And so I would kind of show him some moves. And then I got a text message from my ex-wife a couple weeks ago. So yeah, those jiu-jitsu moves that you were showing Connor, he just choked out our neighbor.
So it works.
Sorry, yeah, it works. Yeah.
I was like, is the neighbor kid okay? He's like, oh yeah, he's fine. I was like, well, that's awesome. Good for Connor.
Good for Connor. Yeah.
What kind of choke? Was it rear naked?
Yeah. How was his technique?
My nephew is, going to turn 8 this week, actually. He started doing jiu-jitsu. His dad did it on and off, white belt. He got him into it, probably like a couple years ago, but he's like, you know, not the type of kid that's going to go out and fight people. He's like, he just enjoys doing it. He's a big kid. And he came out to AGF, tournament to watch me. He was just like, dad, I want to do this. Awesome. And I was like, there's kids tournaments.
Kids tournaments
too,
for sure.
He's like, how come I didn't know that, dad? His dad's like, I don't know. Yeah. Talk to your coaches, man. Yeah. So AGF obviously popped back up and I messaged them. So he signed up for it. So
sweet.
That's cool.
Like last week he did his first like quote competition class. And his dad's like, yeah, he's gotten his first taste of like actually like competing versus just like having fun with his friends in jiu-jitsu. And like, I think he likes it. So we'll see how the tournament goes for him. So he's going to be rolling on Saturday. So I'll go watch him, and then obviously I'll be there on Sunday.
Sweet.
Well, I always thought that the story with Josh and his dad was always really cool. Yeah. Like Josh McKinney.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't know the story.
So him and his dad are both black belts, and they both started at the – or his dad, started, his dad like started 6 months before.
Yeah, his dad's – Oh, really? Yeah, and Josh has been training since he was like 13.
Yeah.
And so like him and his dad did it together, and then yeah and they got their black belts like within –
6 months
like
of each
six
other.
6 months of each That's other, awesome. Which was pretty sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was Kyle's first and second black belts.
Yeah, now they've
cool.
got their own gym and all that over in Illinois.
Yep.
And
yeah, heading on.
Yeah. Yeah. I still haven't been out there.
Yeah, me neither.
I need to make, I always say I'm going to make it out there. It's just a fucking hike.
Yeah. A lot of those head nod guys would come out to us on Saturdays.
Yeah, I train with, because I when I was getting ready for this last match, I was showing up to the Revive Open mats every Friday for several weeks. And then, a lot of those guys train out there like Jeff and it's fucking monsters.
Yep.
Yep. They just gave out like, I think that they just promoted like 3 or 4 people to black belt actually. I think the other night. So it was pretty sweet. Yeah.
Adam invited me out there probably about a month ago.
Where? All right,
to Revive.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It's
didn't get a chance to go, but
yeah. We need to get you back in there.
I know.
So Brett, what's it like having two girls, man?
We both have
two boys.
Remember how I was talking about the it's probably I don't know if it's worse or better than you guys. It sounds probably worse. I don't know. Yeah, you guys have it worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, dude, I was just like, the fact that you said that your daughter can sit, like, you can bring her to class and she doesn't like, I could never bring my son to a jiu-jitsu class right now. There's not a chance.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way he's going to find something and break it. Like, everything looks like a nail in your hammer. It's like,
she'll be in the corner, just run around like it's dumpster fire over there, but nobody really, there's Pat.
Yeah, I guess there's not that much he can break there, but like, I just know he would be trying to like jump in on partake in the
neon belly.
Yeah, exactly. No, he'd be jumping on top.
I usually would like roll over in the corner that's closer to her so I can keep an eye on her. So there's times where I'm like trying to like fight off somebody choking me and I'll hear, dad. I'll look up. I'm like, don't watch me get choked out.
You're supposed to think daddy's invincible.
Dad kills the monsters, man.
Yeah.
But no, it's been awesome. Obviously going into, you never know what you're going to get. And I think I just assumed I was going to have a boy the first time just because like, I don't know if you guys know this, I'm a boy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what your mindset is. And then they're like, oh, it's a girl. And it was just like, it was never like I wanted to have a boy or a girl. It just shifted my mindset. And honestly, I'm like the biggest girl dad. I just realized like earlier in this that I'm really wearing her, like whatever it's called.
A hair tie
on my wrist right now still. And yeah, get the, you know, get princess tattoos and nails painted and everything like that too. So, but you know, I think I try to wrestle with her, and like she loves kind of be like a tomboy too and stuff. So we still play that up as well. But her, this is Sophia, my oldest. Her Halloween costume is probably the best representation of her personality, which she wanted to be a princess, but she also wanted to be a ghost. So she said she was going to be a princess ghost because she wanted to be a scary princess. So we literally painted her face so she looked like she was dead. And she had this like glow in the dark princess outfit. And everybody was like, oh, are you a zombie princess? What the hell is this? It's just 3 year old. Like, that's hilarious. Pretty much her. She wants to like wear pink and then go fucking jump off a deck or something. Yeah. So it's a good combination of me and my wife, honestly. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, obviously I love having being a girl dad, you know, having her and everything. And then Blair is our youngest, who's 7 months, and she's kind of, as you guys know, like that age, just starting to get to the age where she's smiling and crawling, yeah, and starting to be a little person. So that's been really exciting to see. And just watching how much like her older sister like loves her, and it's really cool. And I mean, this weekend I was single dad this weekend. My wife was out of town. So I was looking over, and Sophie's just dragging Blair like by her leg, like across like the hardwood. I'm like, oh Jesus Christ. Jesus,
like, yeah, I come out there the other day, and he's just laying, like, we have, you know, I got like the little swing that goes back and forth. Calvin's like laying on top of him while he's in the swing. I'm like, dude, like, what are you doing?
Safe.
Yeah, I'm glad it happened the way it happened with the boys and how close they are in age, because I mean, Connor was still real little when Oliver was born. And then, I mean, there wasn't really a big, like, noticeable gap until really Connor was like a 3 and Oliver was still, you know, 1.5. But then, like, now, like, you can't really tell a difference. Like, you would think there, I mean, obviously Connor is much taller than Oliver, but Oliver is built like me, much thicker and stronger than Connor. And they go at it all the time. It's great. I've told this a few times on here, but they would start punching each other. So like, I'm like, all right, well, I gotta be safe about this. So I bought them boxing gloves, and I just told them, I was like, you can't punch above the shoulders or below the waist. So they literally just beat the shit out of each other from their chest to their stomach. And it's great. You know, Connor will come out with a bat out of hell, throwing all a bunch of punches, and Oliver duck and take it. Oliver will just get one solid punch in and drop Connor, and was like, yeah. Yeah, parenting at its finest right there. Yeah. But no, it's fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun having boys. I mean, you know, same taking them to baseball practice and all that shit. Like, it's tough because, like, I'll be sitting there with my team, and the next thing you know, I hear a crash, and I'm like, what the fuck did they just do? And look over, and they've got these medicine balls that they knocked off the rack in there. And then, and I'm like, all right, you guys are coming with me. And I'm putting the guys through a workout. And I'm like, you guys are doing this workout too.
Nice.
And yeah, so you go, and then just take off running. And like, they love, like, Connor loves baseball. Oliver's about it. But they love being around the older guys. And I think that's really cool aspect of everything that's kind of going on with that. And because the older guys are great with them. So, you know, they're getting that kind of, like, Connor's finally kind of seeing what it's like to kind of have an older brother type thing. And then, yeah, they have a great time with it. But yeah, there was one time I'm sitting there, and there's a guy that gives hitting instructions there, and he keeps a notebook. And I look over, and Oliver's just drawing all of his notes and shit. And I'm like, this is the wrong coach to do that to, because he's very, like, type A, particular about his stuff. Like, his notes are meticulous. And now Oliver's just taking a pen and just coloring all over it. I'm like, oh, fuck. That's the last time we're going to be. I'm going to be able to bring these kids to this place. But yeah, it was. Luckily, he understood, and we were able to fix his notes. But yeah, I was just like, oh, fuck. That's fucking boys.
I think I'm most scared about the future with 2 girls. I don't know if you guys have been around many teenage girls.
Yeah.
Challenging.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I'm going to be the only boy in the house, unless we have another one, which is.
You guys think you'll have more?
I don't know. We originally were like, yeah, we'll have 3, and then we had 2, and we're like, maybe not.
We'll see. You know, if we have a third, it's going to be, we're going to wait a while.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
nothing,
it's like chaos right now.
We haven't done anything medically yet, say.
Yeah.
You know, I started taking testosterone, and so apparently that just kind of, unless I take some other medicine.
I had my second daughter, I went on testosterone, so don't. Yeah. Don't bank on that.
Don't bank on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, just, yep.
Damn, man. Well, is there anything else we didn't cover?
No, guys.
Anything else you wanted to plug?
No. It's always just fun doing podcasts and actually sitting down and talking with people for an extended period of time versus just like, you know, 5 minute conversations.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot with just like shutting down the phones and no distractions, no nothing.
That's nice.
Being able to talk to somebody, but we always like to end it with one last thing. We call it the tombstone game. So here lies Brett. What's it say on your tombstone?
Jesus. What I hope it says.
What do you want it to say?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what I wanted to say. Something about, I don't know, being a good husband and father. I think that's like my biggest thing. You know, I enjoy obviously the business side of the business world and obviously strength and conditioning and growing that as much as I can. But at the end of the day, like, I do all that so I can spend time with my wife and kids and provide them with like positive life. And I just enjoy my family time more than anything. So
awesome.
Yeah. Perfect. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning into the show. Make sure if you haven't clicked that subscribe button, please click that subscribe button. Comment what you guys thought below. Hit that like button and we will see you next time.